First of all, I realized I forgot to thank Julian LaFleur for reading the first reading. Penn Young will read the second reading, which is Psalm 91. There's not a lot to introduce Psalms other than to say that Psalms are poems, are prayers, are sacred scriptures for many in both the Jewish and Christian traditions.
Whoever dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Surely He will save you from the fowler's snare and from the deadly pestilence. He will cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness will be your shield and rampart. You will not fear the terror of night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the plague that destroys at midday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. Because He loves me, says the Lord, I will rescue Him. I will protect Him, for He acknowledges my name. He will call on me, and I will answer Him. I will be with him in trouble. I will deliver him and honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation.
When I began to think of the monthly theme of sustenance, the gardener farmer in me immediately thought of roots. To live, to be nourished, plants need roots of some kind. I'm sure there's exceptions that some of you can tell me, but my sense is plants need roots. We'll go with it, that's our metaphor. Because I think that we too need roots to survive. Roots are a key to what sustains us. Roots can nurture us by connecting us to people, places, and events beyond our individual lives. Spiritually and religiously, we need roots to sustain and nurture us. In the first reading, Kathleen Norris offers us a way of thinking about our religious roots. She explains that the Latin word religion is linked both to ligature, a cord binding us, and to ligament, a linking connection that enables movement. Religious roots, she insists, do not need to be enslaving bonds. They can also be ligaments that help us to move. To illustrate, she describes the ligaments she has with her two grandmothers. Norris does not hold back her critical words. She describes the faith of one grandmother as easy answers of fundamentalism and the other as the banalities of a conventionally liberal faith. Although clearly she does not agree wholeheartedly with either of her grandmothers, she still claims a connection, a ligament, a root to her grandmother's faith. She claims that her own faith is what it is because of her connections to her roots, to her grandmothers who represent the two poles that she sought to avoid, easy answers or a trite, banal faith. In my life, Psalm 91, which Penn read for us, is a religious root that links me to my grandfather, Harold. Before leaving for World War II, my great-grandfather, Walter, gathered the family in the living room and had my grandfather kneel in the middle of the family. And the family minister had come, and they all laid their hands on Harold and prayed for him. And the minister claimed Psalm 91 as a shield and as a protection for my grandfather as he went off to war. But would these promises of safety actually come true? As a soldier in World War II, Harold became a member of the 1st Special Service Forces, the forerunner to today's Green Berets and other special forces. Specially trained, the force, as Grandpa always referred to it, was sent out to do things that other units could not do. For example, in December of 1943, they scaled a steep mountainside at night, going up Mount La Defensa in Italy. They surprised the Germans and took the mountain, a battle that eventually would open the way for the Allied troops to enter Rome. The Battle of La Defensa was reenacted in the 1968 movie, The Devil's Brigade. Quentin Tarantino also cited the force as an inspiration for his movie, Inglourious Basterds. Brad Pitt wears the symbol of the force on his uniform. But when Quentin Tarantino picks something as an inspiration for one of his violence-soaked films, you know that's not a good sign. Indeed, the force suffered a more than 50% casualty rate. My grandfather, Harold, he returned whole in body, if not always in spirit, suffering like many combat veterans from nightmares that sometimes racked his sleep. But he did come home. For the rest of his life, he would continue to claim Psalm 91 as a promise and ground for his faith. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. The story of that psalm and the many, many times that my grandfather should have died in World War II have helped to shape my religious imagination when I was a girl. Such a story made it easy to believe in a personal God who took care of those who had faith in him. Harold never spoke much about his faith, but I knew that story. And I also watched him as he lived out his faith in service. I watched as he ushered at the Central United Methodist Church with a white carnation in his lapel. I watched as he stood on a ladder and painted the parsonage for the 10th time. Or as he sang hymns so sweetly in his rich baritone voice. Sitting beside him in church as he sang is one of my favorite childhood memories. He and I also sang hymns together at my grandmother's bedside as she died from cancer. And when I sat alone in the pew at his memorial service, I cried. The following summer, I had an opportunity to go to Italy. And so I decided to make a bit of a pilgrimage and to find Mount La Defensa. I looked at a map, I found the mountain, I found the steep side, and I went to the town at the base of the mountain. When I arrived, I drove slowly through the town and looked up. But uncertain of what I was seeing, I stopped a young couple and asked them, "Is that Mount La Defensa?" Fortunately, they spoke English, but they were French and visiting her grandmother, and they didn't know the area. So they brought me to her grandmother, who was very excited, and said, "The neighbor will know." So we marched as a little group over to the neighbor's house, and the wife answers the door and says, see, my husband Angelo, he will know." So Angelo was out, but we waited a few minutes, and he came. And he fortunately also spoke some English. And it turned out that Angelo was a retired Italian paratrooper. And his hobby was to walk the mountains, collecting relics and remnants of the battles that had happened there. And his basement was turned into an amateur museum to the force. He showed me around proudly, reverently, showing me all that he had collected, an honor to have met me, a granddaughter of a member of the force. He also explained to me that the battle had happened over two sister peaks. One was Mount La Defensa that the Americans went up, and the other was Mount Camino, which the British took. And he was about to lead a group up the mountain that afternoon, the group of the neighbors and their visiting family. Did I want to join them on a trip, a hike up that mountain? Sure. Following a caravan of cars across terrifying back roads on the mountainside of Italy, we finally came to a trail and parked and headed off by foot up a not flat trail. There were 16 of us, from school-aged kids to a gray-haired grandmother. And as we walked, conversations flowed in French, Italian, and English. When we arrived at the top, there was a small stone chapel. The kids were allowed to pull the bell a few times, and the older woman set to sweeping the interior. Outside, backpacks opened and were laid out on large boulders, and a feast of breads and cheeses and figs and pears and sausage and pepperoni and wine, no labels, local from down the road, all came out and we feasted together. By this point, the sun was setting over the mountains to the west. After descending in the twilight, I extended my deepest thanks and took my leave to return to where I was staying. That was about 5 years ago, after I had become skeptical of a personal God answering prayers. But on that day, I sat in the little chapel on Mount Camino and prayed from deep within my soul a big thank you for my grandfather's safety. As the psalm had promised, Harold had lived a long life, and I, his granddaughter, could return decades later to honor him by feasting in joy with those who lived in freedom and peace at the foot of the mountain. For some of us, it might be easy to disparage the notion that a personal God would protect one man in the middle of a war. Rationally, it doesn't make sense to me. Yet when I sat in the chapel on the peak of Mount Camino, I felt a deep sense of connection across the decades to that place, to whatever causes and circumstances that kept him alive, which gave him to me for so many precious years. I felt that I understood something about him and his faith after sitting there, praying there, and feasting there. He was glad to be alive. Whether or not we agreed that he was alive because of Psalm 91 or a personal God, his gratitude for life showed in how he lived and shaped my own sense of gratitude for life. He never spoke about his faith, and so he never preached at me about dogma, unlike his fundamentalist wife, Betty, who was very articulate. Instead, Harold showed me his faith by how he lived, with gratitude and in service to others. And this is the kind of faith I hold on to, that faith of gratitude and service is a ligature, a link between us. We all have spiritual and religious roots. We are linked to people present and past who have shaped how we understand and experience our faith. We have all received lessons about faith from others, family members, friends, a minister, a rabbi, a teacher. I don't believe that faith arises in a vacuum. Rather, our faith and our religious beliefs emerge within particular contexts of family, specific traditions such as lighting candles, singing songs, marking some holidays and not others. Whether we grew up Catholic, Methodist, Jewish, atheist, or Unitarian Universalist, I believe that we all carry within ourselves a living link to those traditions, to those roots. When we sing Spirit of Life each week, One of the lyrics we sing is the phrase, "Roots hold me close." When you hear that, do you think about what that means to you? What are your roots? The roots that sustain you, that help to nurture you and your faith, your spirit. I feel deeply that fostering the roots of our own personal religious and spiritual past can be an important sense and source of spiritual sustenance. Once again, this does not mean we can't be critical of our roots. We do not need to be bound to the religious views of our parents, our friends, or our former church, temple, minister, or teacher. But we do need to recognize how we have been shaped by those experiences and those beliefs. Our religious roots can be ligaments connecting us to our past, even as we find our own way forward. This may sound very conceptual, but over the upcoming holiday season, many of us will be sitting down to meals with extended family, where we will come face to face with our roots. When you find your blood pressure rising, I encourage you to look for the connections that you can celebrate. Look for the lessons and the values that you've received from those roots. Ask yourself how those roots have shaped who you are today. A number of years ago, I realized that I have a quirk that when I'm really happy, I unconsciously start to hum the Christian hymns of my youth. Let's be clear. You know, I'm trained as a theologian. I'm critical of a lot of the theology in those hymns and the language. But I have been shaped so deeply into my subconscious by the feelings of hope and happiness, love and gratitude, which my childhood faith and religious experiences infused into those hymns. At first, when I recognized what I was doing in humming these hymns and which hymns they were, I would stop my humming, disgusted by these remnants of my religious past. And then, now, I smile and I keep on humming. I allow my rootedness in these memories, the memories of singing hymns with my grandfather, to just feed my spirit. Amen.